You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report. And our guest on this hour is Carol Canfouche. Carol, it's good to have you here this morning. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me, Eric.
The question we start out with is a big one, but take your time and play with it. Who are you? What do we need to know to kind of just start the conversation? What are some pieces about who you are or what you value?
Okay. My name's Carol Canfouche. I am from Aliquippa, Pennsylvania, a little town outside of Pittsburgh, steel town.
Uh-huh.
I moved to Ithaca about 16 years ago because I loved it, I guess. I have a husband and two dogs. And I guess I'm dedicated to the unification of misanthropes.
the unification of misanthropes.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So what do you mean by that?
I mean, there's so many misfits in society, you know,
mm-hmm.
There's no real home for them.
Right.
And I've found through the years that those are the people that I'm most connected to and have the most fun with. So I think that I work in a restaurant. I've worked in restaurants for years.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a certain personality type that finds themselves in that sort of environment and profession.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I know a young man who got himself sorted out in working in the restaurant. His name's Noah.
Excellent.
I think you may know Noah too.
Oh, really?
Yes.
He was young. I worked with him when he was young.
Yeah. He was very young, but that was incredibly important in his life, and it helped. And I was his stepfather was. I helped the family through his death.
Oh.
And after that experience, kind of accepting adulthood and letting go of some of the knots of adolescence, working in the restaurant helped to give him a grounding and wonderful discipline.
That's lovely to hear. That's
and because he was an outsized personality who was not happy. I can see why you might call this a society of misanthropes or whatever. It's wonderful. You brought some music with you, and
I did.
You wanted to start with "Inner City Traveling Man" by, how do you pronounce it? Yacine Gay.
Yacine Gay. Yeah, it's actually Amerigo Gazaway is the producer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And this is a combination of two artist styles, I believe. Yes.
Correct.
And do you want to say anything before we play it?
I think it speaks for itself.
Okay, very good.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
I wanted to become an aviator, and I wanted to become a great singer. I always had the same dream. The dream was that I'm singing for hundreds of thousands of people. They're beautiful people, and I got the standing ovation. And then about the being an aviator, I always thought I'd like to fly.
Yo, it's time to play. All right, see you in the next one.
That you let me go. I'm a inner city traveling man.
With tears in her eyes, she said it's just really goodbye.
From the wise of MCs, these cats is paying more than half a pound. I got my back and snatch it down. I got the skate, but we could probably run the back of town. Scenarios like this is tear jerkers for the modern MC. I eat a blue collar worker, cause this ain't cold rhyming, no different from coal mining. We both on assignment to unearth the diamond. When you start climbing and them eyes start shining, you be struggling and striving, and they think you prime diamond. Maintain and keep silent, make no an observation. It's confrontation, this is the daily operation. My concentration, stay focused on my recitation. About to reach my destination with no pause or hesitation. Baby, make the preparation, cause this ain't no recreation. This is pro ball, and we letting you know, y'all, at the show, y'all, doing this for
heavy ass bags up off my backbone. Around the world with the catalog of rap songs. My baby girl is walking, been away for that long. But no, you haven't, well, at least it's how it seemed to me. My hometown is like a whole different scenery. The old timers on the stoop leaning leisurely. The new jacks up in the park smoking greenery. Easily taken for granted when you up in it. But it's sweet sinning when you've been down for a minute. Move around city limits, break them down with the vintage. The innovating classical b-boy image. Collect the winnings, cause that's the reason that we came here. This thing is not a game here. The fortune, not the fame here. From New York to the Cadillacs, Cali and the Cadillacs. Chicago, no, we innovate. Infiltrate Virginia State. D.C. make me simulate. Philly, no, we penetrate. Georgia make us generate. Let's set a date to get the pace. They celebrate my jams in foreign lands. Even your mayors in Japan know who I am. Been our son, make everybody out in the Ponzi. Ichiban, make God man.
You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report, and our guest on this hour is Carol Canfush. Carol, what experiences have helped to lead up to this life of, what do I want to say, mentoring, being with, bearing with the misanthropes?
I think my childhood and the environment in which I was raised.
Okay.
Is it. I'm the youngest of five kids in a long generational family. My mom and dad were born in the early 30s. I was born in 70. Mm-hmm. So my nieces and nephews, I have seven of them on my side. I'm mid-generational. So I'm literally right in between
right.
the parents and the kids.
Right.
And I think, you know, being the youngest of five, you struggle to find your own identity.
Mm-hmm.
And then you walk a fine balance because you need to mentor. You need to be a role model for the little ones, you know?
Especially if they're nearby and you're helping take care of them.
Yeah, totally,
yep.
totally.
Yep.
So I think that's where I realized that I could be just a kid in the corner, you know,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
watching, but also
Influencing. Yeah. I'm the sixth of seven, and my parents were born in the early 20s, and I am, you know, only 10 years older than my oldest nephews and nieces, and, you know, my siblings are in their mid-70s.
Yeah.
So it's just, you know, it's a very different way to grow up.
And all their experiences, too.
Yeah.
I mean,
right.
Because our parents lived through so much.
Yeah, so... Yeah. So, how did you grow into the role? What did you do that made you more skillful? I mean, I can see how you observed it from your family position, mm-hmm. but how did you develop the ability to be skillful at it?
Experience,
yeah.
life.
But what were you doing? What were you doing that helped bring out this? And what have you had to learn to be good at it?
I think it's innate. I don't think I learned. I think that I'm just a being in the world. I'm uh-huh. just walking the streets, and I'm finding ways to fulfill some inner calling.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So you express it.
Yeah.
And it's there. It's just there, but you have to express
there.
It. And so I guess maybe the better question then for you would be, what occasions have drawn that out of you? And you know, because you came here 15 years ago, were you already at the point of being skillful at that time? Or is that something that happened?
Who's to say,
yeah,
I
yeah,
think.
Yeah,
who's
yeah,
to
yeah,
say?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Or did you? Or yeah. Yeah. I get it. How long have you worked in restaurants?
Since I was 18 years old. I love it. I've loved food since I was 8. I've been cooking since I was 8. Because
mm-hmm.
I come from a culinary background. My dad's family, you know, the ladies worked in the churches. They
mm-hmm.
always big parties. My mom's family always hosting, you know. We had huge families, so there was
yeah.
always food. Everything was a celebration. Everything was surrounded. Everything was food oriented,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
centric. And I just found myself, you know, one day needing a job, and I applied to be a busboy.
Mm-hmm.
And I loved it, everything about it. I love the pace. I love the personality that it brings. I love the people. I love the, you're just feeding people. You're making them happy. I like to see people smile and enjoy themselves. And restaurants can do that.
Yes, it can. You know? It can. And what kinds of restaurants have you worked in?
I've worked in all sorts. In Pittsburgh, I worked in some corporate restaurants that were just high volume, fast paced. Houlihan's, it was called in Station Square. It was a...
It's a small chain, or...
Yeah, I think it was a national chain. Yeah. We, the thing about restaurants is that you can have a life that can be supported pretty easily. So at Houlihan's, friends and I used to work doubles. We would work like 20 days in a row, 20 doubles in a row, and then take off two and a half, 3 weeks and just do whatever we wanted to, whether it was go see music, go, you know, travel around shows. And I think that the lack of 9 to 5, the living off the wall, the just being able to pick up and go whenever you want, wherever you want, and having the money in your pocket to do it. Restaurants are great for that sort of thing, you know?
And that, and I wouldn't associate, I mean, being an outsider to the restaurant life, I wouldn't know that you could do the 20 days on and then disappear for you know, 2 weeks.
Yep, as long as you get your shifts covered.
Right. Okay, yeah. So that, so you, it's a negotiation with your coworkers so that everything's covered. So it sounds like you also built a little bit of a community.
Yeah. Wherever you go, you have to, right?
Sure. And that's something that people often overlook. Although I'm gonna bet that you say it's in your DNA. Yeah. What kind of a, how would you describe the community you have created here in Ithaca?
Once again, misanthropes, and now they're all over. I mean, I've worked at Maxi's for 16 years. It's crazy to think about, and there's so many different pockets throughout those years of friends that I've kept, friends that I, you know, stay in touch with, still hold dear to my heart. And I don't know what draws us. I don't know what drew us together, what keeps us together.
Right. But you stay in touch with some of them.
With some of them.
And is there a pattern to the ones you stay in touch with and the ones you don't stay in touch with, or do you, or have you noticed? What's the tie?
There's a tie. We're the misanthropes. We're the island of misfit toys, I think. The ones who don't...
What makes a misfit?
Well, what defines a misfit? Good question. Radio silence.
We're good for a little while.
Okay, that's good. what defines a misfit? Wow. I'm speechless. I have no words. I can't define. I have to think about that one.
Yeah. Okay. And you know, come back to you. We'll come back to that. Okay. You brought some music.
Excellent.
What would you like to go to at this point? And I have all, I have everything you had on your list.
Okay.
So what should we play right now?
I think that we should probably play the Dylan song. I think that could help, even part of it.
Sure.
Whatever
sure.
part. Absolutely. It's long.
Actually, and we'll start it because he introduces what he's doing in it, and we'll start at the beginning, and we'll go until we need to stop. This is Bob Dylan's last thoughts on Woody Guthrie.
There's this book coming out, and they asked me to write something about Woody, sort of like, what does Woody Guthrie mean to you in 25 words? And I couldn't do it. I wrote out 5 pages, and I have it here. It's a, have it here by accident, actually. but I'd like to say this out loud. So if you can sort of roll along with this thing here, this is called Last Thoughts on Woody Guthrie. When your head gets twisted and your mind grows numb, when you think you're too old, too young, too smart, or too dumb, when you're lagging behind and losing your pace in a slow motion crawl or life's busy race, no matter what you're doing, if you start giving up, if the wine don't come to the top of your cup, if the wind got you sideways with one hand holding on and the other starts slipping and the feeling is gone, and your train engine fire needs a new spark to catch it, and the wood's easy finding, but you're lazy to fetch it, and your sidewalk starts curling and the street gets too long, and you start walking backwards or you know that it's wrong, and lonesome comes up as down goes the day, and tomorrow's morning seems so far away, and you feel the rains from your pony are slipping, and your rope is a-sliding because your hands are dripping, and your sun-desert and evergreen valleys turn to broken-down slums and trash can alleys, and your sky cries water and your drain pipes are pouring, and the lightning's a-flashing and the thunder's a-crashing, and the windows are rattling and breaking and the rooftops are shaking, and your whole world's a-slamming and banging, and your minutes of sun turn to hours of storm, and to yourself you sometimes say, I never knew it was going to be this way, why didn't they tell me the day I was born? And you start getting chills and you're jumping from sweat and you're looking for something you ain't quite found yet, and you're knee-deep in dark water with your hands in the air and the whole world's watching with a window peak stare, and your good gal leaves and she's long gone a-flying, and your heart feels sick like fish when they're frying. And your jackhammer falls from your hands to your feet, but you need it badly and it lays on the street, and your bell's banging loudly but you can't hear its beat, and you think your ears might have been hurt or your eyes have turned filthy from the slight binding dirt, and you figured you failed in yesterday's rush and you were faked out and fooled while facing a four-flush, and all the time you're holding three queens. It's making you mad, it's making you mean, like in the middle of Life magazine, bouncing around a pinball machine. And there's something on your mind that you want to be saying, that somebody someplace ought to be hearing. But it's trapped on your tongue, sealed in your head, and it bothers you badly when you're laying in bed. And no matter how you try, you just can't say it, and you're scared to your soul, you just might forget it. And your eyes get soaking from the tears in your head, and your pillows of feathers turn to blankets of lead, and the lion's mouth opens, and you're staring at his teeth, and his jaws start closing with you underneath, and you're flat on your belly with your hands tied behind, and you wish you'd never taken that last detour sign. You say to yourself, just what am I doing? On this road I'm walking, on this trail I'm turning, on this curve I'm hanging, on this pathway I'm strolling, in the space I'm taking, in this air I'm inhaling. Am I mixed up too much? Am I mixed up too hard? Why am I walking? Where am I running? What am I saying? What am I knowing on this guitar I'm playing? On this banjo I'm freeling, on this mandolin I'm strumming, in a song I'm singing, in a tune I'm humming, in the words that I'm thinking, in the words I'm writing. In this ocean of hours I'm all the time drinking. Who am I helping? What am I breaking? What am I giving? What am I taking? But you try with your whole soul best never to think these thoughts and never to let them kind of thoughts gain ground or make your heart pound. But then again, you know when they're around, just waiting for a chance to slip and drop down. Because sometimes you hear them in the nighttime come creeping and you fear they might catch you sleeping. And you jump from your bed from the last chapter of dreaming and you can't remember for the best of your thinking if that was you in a dream that was screaming. And you know that's something special you're needing. You know there's no drug that'll do for the healing and no liquor in the land to stop your brain from bleeding. You need something special. You need something special, all right. You need a fast-flying train on a tornado track to shoot you someplace and shoot you back. You need a cyclone wind on a steam engine howler that's been banging and booming and blowing forever that knows your troubles 100 times over. You need a greyhound bus that don't bar no race, that won't laugh at your looks, your voice, or your face, and buying a number of bets in the book will be rolling long after the bubblegum craze. You need something to open up a new door to show you something you've seen before but overlooked 100 times or more. You need something to open your eyes. You need something to make it known that it's you and no one else that owns that spot that you're standing, that space that you're sitting, that the world ain't got you beat. It ain't got you licked. It can't get you crazy no matter how many times you might get kicked. You need something special, all right. You need something special to give you hope. But hope's just a word that maybe you said, maybe you heard on some windy corner around a wide-angle curve. But that's what you need, man, and you need it bad. Your trouble is you know it too good, because you look and you start getting the chills, because you can't find it on a dollar bill, and it ain't on Macy's windowsill, and it ain't on real rich kid's road map, and it ain't made in no fat kid's fraternity house, and it ain't made in no Hollywood wheat germ, and it ain't on that dim-lit stage or that half-wit comedian on it, ranting and raving and taking your money, and you think it's funny. Now you can't find it neither in no nightclub, no yacht club, and it ain't in the seats of a supper club, and sure as hell you're bound to tell, no matter how hard you rub, you just ain't going to find it on your ticket stub. No, it ain't in the rumors people are telling you, it ain't in the pimple lotion people are selling you, it ain't in the cardboard box house or down any movie star's blouse, and you can't find it on the golf course, and Uncle Remus can't tell you, and neither can Santa Claus, and it ain't in the cream puff hairdo or cotton candy clothes, it ain't in the dime store dummies and bubblegum goons, and it ain't in the marshmallow noises of the chocolate cake voices that come knocking and tapping and Christmas rapping, saying, ain't I pretty, ain't I cute, look at my skin shine, look at my skin glow. Look at my skin laugh, look at my skin cry, when you can't even sense if they got any insides, these people so pretty in their ribbons and bows. Now you'll not now no other day find it on the doorsteps made of paper mache, and inside with the people made of molasses that every other day buy a new pair of sunglasses. And they in the 50-star generals and flipped out phonies who turn you in for a tenth of a penny, who breathe and burp and bend and crack, and before you can count from 1 to 10, do it all over again, but this time behind your back, my friend. The ones that wheel and deal and whirl and twirl and play games with each other in the sandbox world. You can't find it either in the no-talent fools that run around gallant, make all the rules for the ones that got talent. And ain't the ones that ain't got any talent but think they do and think they're fooling you. The ones that jump on the wagon just for a while because they know it's in style. To get their kicks, get out of it quick and make all kinds of money and chicks. And you yell to yourself and you throw down your hat saying, Christ, do I got to be like that? Ain't there no one here that knows where I'm at? Ain't there no one here that knows how I feel? Good God Almighty, that stuff ain't real. No, but that ain't your game. It ain't your race. You can't hear your name. You can't see your face. You got to look some other place. And where do you look for this hope that you're seeking? Where do you look for this lamp that's burning? Where do you look for this oil well gushing? Where do you look for this candle that's glowing? Where do you look for this hope that you know is there and out there somewhere? And your feet can only walk down two kinds of roads. Your eyes can only look through two kinds of windows. Your nose can only smell two kinds of hallways. You can touch and twist and turn two kinds of doorknobs. You can either go to the church of your choice or you go to Brooklyn State Hospital. You find God in the church of your choice. You find Woody Guthrie in Brooklyn State Hospital. And though it's only my opinion, I may be right or wrong, you find them both in Grand Canyon, sundown.
And that was Bob Dylan with Last Thoughts on Woody Guthrie. A eulogy to a man who helped us to appreciate the misfit toys. And also to people who started out life with an odd angle, which is another way of saying it, and to those who were broken. And how do you bring a measure of peace? And you know, you were saying in the break that and this is the Made of Clay report. Let me do the station ID, which I forgot. And so this is WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay report. And our guest on this hour is Carol Canfouche. And Carol, having worked in restaurants for probably close to 40 years or 35 years. What is it that, you know, when you hang out with these misfit folks and you wear the label yourself,
sure.
What is it that you get from being together?
The sense of camaraderie, the sense of having other people around who you don't have to define, you don't have to explain. You can just say, you can be.
Nobody judging you.
None.
Yeah. No. Yeah. And how do people stay forever? Do people come and go? How do people come in and out of that camaraderie? When do they seem like it's time to move on? When do they seem like it's time to stay?
In my life, or
in your life, in your experience of these. I mean, in your experience, but also what you've seen in others.
In others, yeah.
Yeah. Both ways.
Most people that I've come across aren't necessarily in a restaurant as a career. They're especially here, you know, with all the transient.
It's one of the few sure jobs in town.
It is one of the few sure jobs in town, but it's there. It's also difficult to find people that
you can rely on.
That you can rely on.
Sure.
Yeah. We say at Maxie's all the time that you could train anyone to do anything. But it's having that person around all the time, the relationship, you know. So that's how we sort of go into it in the interview process. It's, you know, as a human, do I want to be with you 40 hours a week, 50 hours a week?
Right. In crazy busy moments and really slow times.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. So that is that lends itself to long-term relationships that, you know, either fall by the wayside and then come back or keep going, or can go for 10 years without talking to someone and then they reappear.
You pick it right up.
Yep.
Yeah. I have a life littered with friendships that I pick up every 5 to 10 years or so, and we can take off, and the cadences of their voices, I can feel them resonate from when we were 20 years old.
Absolutely.
Or when we were 40 or whatever. Yeah.
When I was 20, I met my husband, and we had a close group of friends. We lived in downtown Pittsburgh. It was the early 90s. It was crazy, you know. Pittsburgh was still just coming out of the recession, the Steel Town Blues. And I had a friend who I have to this day. I mean, he lives in Philly. He's got a wife and two teenage girls. And the three of us spent maybe not more than a year and a half total together. But that year and a half forged who we are, who we've become, and who we continue to be. And it's just mind-blowing to think about all the people that I've met, seen, everyone. I mean, to think that, you know, some relationships are so short, but they're just so powerful and meaningful. And I mean, I saw him this summer. I don't think we've seen him in 3 or 4 years.
Right.
And he, you know, drove into the driveway and it was right back to 1990, 91.
Yeah. A little, both shocking and relieving.
Absolutely. Like, why do we live so far away from each other?
Yeah.
That's how it was with my family too. You know, I can't stress enough, like, the, I was so lucky to be born into the family that I was born into, and the time and the place, and man, just what my mom and dad taught us.
What, I mean, so unpack that a little bit.
My mom used to always say, don't worry about what's going on in the rest of the world. Just make sure that your corner of the world is good, clean, tidy, what you want it to be. And the rest of the world will just happen. But if your corner's okay, then you don't have to worry. And that's, and I, you know, as a young, sort of aggressive adolescent in my thoughts, you know, idealist, I would get so worked up and so angry about so many things that I just were out of my control. And, and I would be like, oh, you don't know what you're talking about. But now I realize that she's totally right. And if that corner of my world, you know, is 50 people, then if I can keep those 50 people happy and healthy and fulfilled, then whatever else is going on is just filler.
And yeah, and for a lot of people, 50 is just a huge, outrageous number. You know, 2 or 3 might be enough.
Yeah.
Wow. So that was from your mom. How did your dad contribute to your sense?
My dad was just taught us to be goofy and just to be who we were. You know, like whatever. He just always supported us no matter what crazy endeavor we were entering, and always supportive, always.
So he was kind of the cheerleader.
Yeah.
In some ways, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
Yeah,
totally.
Yeah. What kind of work did your parents do?
My dad was a steel worker. He worked in the mill for, I think, 35 years before they shut it down, and came from a line of steel workers. He was an electrician. And my mom was, I mean, she was a mom until, I think when I was 8, that would have been 78, she went to work, back to work full time in the unemployment office in Beaver County, Pennsylvania, which in 1978 were, I mean, I remember.
Devastated.
Yeah. Lines around the blocks, double deep of people trying to get their claims. And then she worked for a while as a, forget the title, but she worked as a civilian in the Air Force. I think it was the grief claims department. She would be the one who went to the families' homes of armed forces, Air Force, who died. I mean, at that time, there weren't wars, really. Right. So just
deaths that weren't in action.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah. Thanks. Totally. Yeah. She would go and explain the benefits packages. Uh-huh. So she was like a grief counselor. Yep. These devastated families. Yep. She loved it.
Yeah. Are your parents alive?
Or, no, God. No, and I think that, you know, reading through the questions.
80s. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I think that was the biggest, I mean, other than being born, the biggest event was losing my parents. My dad died of cancer in 2000, and my mom passed away suddenly in 2010, and that was devastating.
Yeah. And was that, did your dad die before you moved here?
No, actually, no, I had moved
you
here.
You had just moved here.
Yeah, I had moved here, and I thought about moving back.
Yeah, no, I would imagine you would. You know, that's the.
I got to go back.
The heart pull.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The last conversation my dad and I had, he was in the hospital, and I. The last conversation we had was about Billie Holiday. Isn't that funny? Porgy, Porgy and Bess. We were talking about it. And then I left his room and immediately went into an alarmed hallway fire escape and set off the alarms in the hospital.
As you were trying to find some space for yourself.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. No, it's so hard.
Yeah.
It is so hard.
Yeah.
Yeah. So did you and your dad share music?
Oh, yeah. My family was, my mom and dad, we had records and albums, always listened to music. They would go dancing every weekend. So it was great.
Five kids and they would go dancing every weekend. That sounds like a smart couple.
yeah. My mom loved Frank Sinatra. My aunts loved Frank Sinatra. My dad loved Johnny Mathis and Sam Cooke. You know,
yeah.
It was great.
Yeah, it sounds like. So where have you taken the music in your life? What is the role of music in your life?
It's always in my head. I say it all the time. I have lyrics for everything. There's always a song in my head, always. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. And how does that play, literally play, in your head while you're cooking, while you're working at the restaurant?
It depends. Yeah, it depends. The shucking station at Maxie's Supper Club, if you've ever been, can get really hairy and busy. And I find myself singing the same. There's a Black Star song, Mos Def and Talib Kweli are Black Star. And it's just every time I'm like in the thick of it,
uh-huh.
That song comes into my head. I sing it and it transports me. It takes me, or actually probably puts me more into the zone, you know?
Right, so, right.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, the music tends to allow you, I mean, having the rhythm and the thoughts allow you to focus then on what you're doing with your hands and your eyes and stuff.
Totally. Yeah. Totally.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah. I don't know where to go here. Do you go to other kinds of music and other activities that you're involved in? Or is it just like a continuous
mood.
Track?
It's a continuous track. It's mood. It's, I started riding a road bike a couple years ago and I would, you know, with my husband who's ridden road, bikes.
Motorcycle?
No,
or
bicycle. Bicycle. And he'll, you know, we'll be somewhere listening to music. He'll try to coach me through how to get up a hill. And I don't want to get up the hill. And in my head, I might be hearing Pink Floyd's Welcome to the Machine.
Uh-huh.
And in his head, he's hearing some high beat per minute, you know, he's thinking heart rate, like, no, just if you bike like this, choo, 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 choo,
yeah,
choo.
Yeah,
and I'm
yeah.
like, no, I just want to, you know. So that sort of thing. And then when I, so that was at the beginning of biking. And as I got better at it, I realized, oh yeah, if I keep a.
Right.
I can go faster.
Right.
It's not as hard. It's not as difficult.
Right.
You know,
right.
The faster I go, the easier it is, as opposed to just dragging myself up a hill.
Right. But you've got to find the right combination
of
gears in the front and the back and the right pace for your feet and the right song in your head. Mm-hmm. And all of those things have to come into alignment.
It's funny when I work online, it's usually, I mean, it's a male driven occupation. There's not many ladies cooking online or, you know.
Right.
So it's interesting because there's always music in kitchens. You have to have music in kitchens, I believe. And it's interesting to hear. It's interesting to work with boys, young guys, and their musical choices.
And everybody gets to choose?
Yeah, for the most part.
Yeah. And, you know, there are some outliers.
Yeah, totally. There's a, I call it white boy music. There's a couple of bands that I just... The guys put on and I'm like, you got to turn it off. You got to turn it off. It's white boy music. I don't like it.
Right. And what is it that makes it hard for you to have it on? What about it?
I don't know. That's a great question. It's just offensive. I don't know. Mm-hmm. And it's nothing. I mean, it's just music. It's just rock and roll. But for whatever reason, it's...
It pushes your buttons.
Yeah, I just don't like it. Yeah. It's just bad. It's bad music.
So as you are, you know, as you're training staff, as you're working with folks, what do you, you know, where do you see... Will you continue doing this for the rest of your life? Because you could, or do you have, you know, something else going on?
Nah, you know, I just want to be gainfully employed and have a great life outside of whatever it is that I do.
Right. And so what is that life outside the whatever it is that you do?
I have two lovely dogs, Hawkeye and Arrow, who I spend a lot of my time with. I love to travel. I like cooking, entertaining, hanging out with friends, listening to music. It's pretty simple.
Right.
It's pretty simple life.
Yeah.
Pretty content.
Yeah. And you're staying here in Ithaca.
For now. There's no reason to leave.
Right. Right. And what about your siblings?
I have a sister in Gettysburg who just got clobbered with that snowstorm. And the rest of them are in Pittsburgh.
Uh-huh.
Or the Pittsburgh area.
Right.
So.
Right. And you're probably making a regular trek or fairly regular trek?
I try. It's hard. Who knew Ithaca was so far from Pittsburgh when I moved here? I really didn't realize.
There is no straight way there.
There's no straight way. It's a dog leg. Yeah, it's six hours. Yeah. No matter what you do.
Right.
It's just too much. But yeah, I try to get back pretty frequently. Mm-hmm. But every time I go, if I get nostalgic for home, I get there and I'm like, oh, I can't wait to get back to Ithaca. Mm-hmm. I love the Finger Lakes. It's just amazing here.
Where should we go next musically?
Let's see. I think that probably we should listen to the greatest song ever recorded in human time.
Uh-huh.
And, that would be 10 years gone.
Okie doke. Here we go. Led Zeppelin from Physical Graffiti. 10 years gone.
Again, it will be. Though the course may change sometimes, rivers always reach the sea. Blind skies of fortune, each has separate ways. That's all right with me. In the midst, I think of you and how it used to be. Mm-hmm.
baby. Did it feel so good? Cause it was just the first time.
Listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca. This is the Made of Clay Report, and our guest on this hour is Carol Canfouche. Carol, I really, really appreciate your taking the risk of coming on this show.
Thank you.
What you have described being a convener of misfit toys is a life of companionship with people who may not relate well to everybody else, but you find a way to relate to them. A life of experience where words are optional.
And well that, said. Well said.
And this is like the anti-environment on some levels of that. But it's also partly why I wanted you to be on the show, because when we hear from each other, even when it's maybe not smooth as it is for some people, for whom the words come super easy, words come really hard for others, words don't matter in some instances, but we can kind of convey a sense. I think it's important. We don't know how to get to know each other in this area. And by inviting people who have different skill sets and different personal styles onto the radio, my hope is that we will become more comfortable in general with each other. And so I thank you for taking that risk, because I know it was a risk. Now, the next question I have is, how have you had to change, perhaps in ways that you wouldn't chosen? What has life given you to adapt to that you really didn't know that you wanted to?
I've had to calm down a lot. I was, I was a hyper person, but I was definitely, adamant about my beliefs regardless.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And,
what does that mean? What were the beliefs that you were adamant about?
They could be anything. It could be anything at all. Irrational, rational, of importance, of no importance. I get worked up.
It was yours and you were going to hold it.
Absolutely. And I've learned, I call it the Canfouche tone. I mean, I see it. I see it in my aunts. I see it in my sisters. I see it in my brothers. I see it in my nieces and my nephews. There's a tone that's just in us.
What does it sound like?
You should ask my husband. We should call Sid.
Well, what's a line that would tell you that you've got the Canfouche tone?
I guess it's often mistaken for anger. Uh-huh. I would say that's, I don't think it's condescending, but I think that it's, can't quite define it.
I'm gonna jump in here, because okay, I grew up in a large family, and my ancestors came from large families, though my generation people don't have large families. There's this attitude, which is not anger, it's not sarcasm, it's a little bit bitterness, a little bit bitter and judgmental, and it's going to zing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not negotiable. It just is.
Mm-hmm. 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 It's not malicious. There's no malice in it. It's just the accusatory, perhaps,
or kind of like let me test what you're made of, because I'm going to push your buttons on this issue, because this is my issue.
Yeah, there's...
Sometimes.
Yeah, totally. Sometimes. Yeah, yeah. And I've... That affects people. That tone can affect adversely the people around me.
right.
pretty quickly.
Right, right. And it's also, I mean, the physical manifestation of that tone is like getting, like, you know, when you've got people on both sides of you and you just elbow them out of the way. It's kind of clearing the yeah. space. And mm-hmm. I grew up in a house with two bedrooms. Well, my early years, two bedrooms. There were, you know, two parents and six siblings at that point. And it was crazy.
Yep. Trundle, you know, it was trundle crazy. Bed. I slept
and
on
so
a trundle.
You have to create space for yourself. And I had really sensitive hearing and I got really upset. So I would go and hide in the pantry because that was the quietest place to be, you know, and
yep.
that, but yeah, no, I have a, and people in those kinds of tight quarters, I think it's probably true more of Europeans. I think, and this is a gross generalization, but there are ways in which we are more overt in our barbs and our creation of space for each other, whereas people from parts of South and East Asia can have more people in a space, and they learn how to avert and how to not confront, and
right.
how, and they learn a different way to negotiate
yeah.
that
yeah.
space. But yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think mm-hmm. I think I have a sense of what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm. I've also, I think, I realized it's important to never have to apologize for my own words or actions. So I live my life with the intent that I won't say anything or do anything that I will ever have to apologize for later.
That's the intent.
It's my intent.
And yeah. how does it work?
It helps me to filter
mm-hmm.
what I do and say. And in an effort to be kinder and more understanding and more compassionate, I think.
When did you learn you needed to do that?
When the day I apologized one too many times, I think. You know, I don't remember what the circumstances were, but
right.
I remember thinking, wow, if I didn't do that,
you wouldn't have to apologize.
I wouldn't
for
have
it.
To apologize.
And the apology would be meaningful if you didn't have to repeat it all
mm-hmm.
the time.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And you just live a kinder, I believe I've become a kinder, gentler human.
Right. And how did your relationships change when that happened? You know, how do they feel different now than they did before?
They're all much, much more important. There's probably fewer of them, fewer relationships.
Okay.
But they're important, and I'll, you know, live or die for any one of them.
For
I
people
guess.
That are in that
yeah.
circle.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally. Yeah. Totally.
Yeah.
Totally.
Right. So you. Yeah. So this. So you. There's a no combat zone
mm-hmm.
around you for the people. In that space and but I also sense that it's not just the people who are in that space, it's an attitude towards the ones you're working with too.
Yeah.
There may be and what I've heard in people who have tried to make that transition is what was once a tendency to be kind of borderline aggressive and barbed becomes more of a sense of humor.
Oh yeah. I would love to be a stand-up comedian.
And what's in the way of what's in the way of your doing that?
I can't even talk to you in a room with the idea that people might be listening to me. The fear.
For fear of what would come out of your uncensored mouth.
Yep.
Okay. And so there's some shyness or just
awkwardly social yeah. awkwardness, I think, uh-huh. more than anything.
So how did, I mean, you know, restaurants are enormously social places. How did you learn to turn off the switch so you're not as awkward, or at least you get over it there?
It's a job. It's like acting.
Okay.
You know, you just put on a face, put on a mask, you wear it.
And then you leave and you go home to your dogs.
Yeah. Totally.
Or hang out with your friends.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. Got it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, that makes perfect sense to me. So one of the things that we closed the show with in the last few minutes of the show is, what do you do to restore yourself intellectually, emotionally, physically, you know, daily, weekly, monthly, whenever you need to? How do you need to know? So let's spend the next few minutes just, you know, What do you do to take care of yourself?
Oh, it's more simple things. I immerse myself in music. I cook a lot.
Even off the job?
Oh, yeah. I love it. I love it. I like the challenge of creating things that I may have never done before.
Mm-hmm.
So I like that. And a lot of time in the woods.
Mm-hmm.
I love the woods. I just love being outside. Anywhere. I like being in the cities too. I just like to be in the world, mm-hmm. you know? I think that's restorative enough.
Yeah. And what I'm hearing that there's probably to be means a variety of things. You are just passing through. You don't have an agenda. You are just taking it in, whatever it is.
I just walk the earth.
Yeah, whether it's in a city or in the woods,
totally,
or whatever, because it all works.
Yeah.
What do you is it when you I get the sense that you play in the kitchen.
Yeah, I guess I play everywhere. I'm a goofball.
Well, but yeah, I mean, yeah, and you can, yeah, but I'm not going to use that in a judgmental way at all
because
I think it's a wonderful thing.
Yeah, no.
It's a compliment. And so when you're playing with ingredients. What do you, what's, think of something you have kind of cooked that you never even tasted before or never thought of before. What is it that you're doing when you play? With your senses, with your mind.
Yeah, I think just testing the boundaries, seeing if what I see in my mind can be executed and enjoyed,
mm-hmm.
which it can't always.
Right. No, I know. I come from the tradition of open the refrigerator, see what's there, look on the shelf. I'm going to make dinner. I've never made this before. I've never seen this before. Yeah. Let's just see.
Let's just do it.
Yeah.
Sometimes it takes 6 hours. Sometimes it takes
two minutes. I don't have 6 hours.
but I do. When I do it,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah. And so, yeah, no, I get it.
We've been known to think about food on a Tuesday.
Right.
Well, what if we did this? Spend the whole week up until Sunday researching it, and then on Sunday just start cooking it.
Right.
You know, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
I think that my friends and I think a lot about food.
Uh-huh.
More than most people mm-hmm. could even imagine is possible.
Right. But it's almost like it's a sport.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It's what you do for entertainment and mm-hmm. how you keep, what have you prepared that surprised you beyond your wildest expectations? And what have you prepared that kind of fell flatter than you imagined it could ever fall?
Oh, geez. Yeah. Let me see. Let me think about that.
Sure. And if nothing comes quickly to mind, that's fine. Or if it's not something you want to tell.
No, it's not. It's not an organic. I'm trying to think.
Sure.
It could have been last night's cheesesteak, you know?
Sure,
11 o'clock
sure.
at night.
Sure. No,
it just wasn't what I wanted.
Yeah.
But it was.
Yeah.
It worked.
Yeah. You wanted to close the show with Walk Alone, The Roots. And do you want to say something about that before we call it a day?
I think that it, again, sums up in a song all the questions that you have just asked me and uh-huh. I was incapable of answering.
You answered. Yeah.
There's something about this song that it speaks volumes. It's great. Black Thought is one of the best poets of our time.
Excellent.
And yeah.
Carol, it's been wonderful to get to know you.
Thanks, Eric. You're very good at this.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
Try trap, no shield, no sword. The unbeaten path got my soul so sore. Allured by the lust, something money can't cure. The devil want me as is, but God, he want more. Eyes closed, eyes open, great another day. Here we go. Like a nigga woke up late in the Truman Show, living life without a care. Mean poker face, but I'm forced to play solitaire till I get up out of here. Move like a wanted man with a bounty on his head. Work alone, sleep alone, eat alone. Daily bread counted till my fingers red. How you gonna judge a man walking in the shoes of a man with a broken leg? Flame on the trail headed for the powder keg. Last place in the race, I ain't never led. Like I ain't never bled. Time to get up out of bed. Serving in the army of one, it's on again.
Walk alone, I walk alone, you know I walk alone. Always been on my own, ever since the day I was born. So I don't mind walking alone. Walk alone, I walk alone, you know I walk alone. Always been on my own, ever since the day I was born. So I don't mind walking alone.
Chess match, I'm in the death trap. I'm trying to find out where the eggs in the nest at. I'm one blood when the sky turns jet black. No love in the world can correct that. I'm in a slow lane, I'm on my Cobain. I'm in a new spot trying to run an old game. I got a new chick, put out my old flame. No peace, no sleep, no love for a young beast. You can put me in a cage, you can put me in the jungle where the lion get blazed. It ain't no hell like the hell I raised. I die in the bed I made, for I lay with a love I loathe. I'm a snake in the garden of bones. I'm a loner in a world of clones. I'm the piece that don't belong. See, I'm wrong where the reaper wrong. Till they put my name on the stone.
Walk alone, I walk alone, you know I walk alone. Always been on my own, ever since the day I was born. So I don't mind walking alone. Walk alone, I walk alone, you know I walk alone. Always been on my own, ever since the day I was born. So I don't mind walking alone.
The longest walk I'll probably ever be on. The road to perdition, guess I'm finna get my plea on. I pray these wings strong enough to carry me on. I promise every second felt as if it took an eon. Walking like the Lost Boys, the Sierra Leone. The Trail of Tears, what they got me like a Cherokee on. Between the ears, something I require therapy on. For working to the bone like my name, Robert Guillaume. I go above and beyond, the duty call truly on. Even though they kinda blew me off like a booty call. Ask me if I'm just another moolie or a movie star. Forced to face the music like a graduate of Juilliard. Walk alone, talk alone, get my Charlie Parker on. Make my mark alone, shed light upon a dark alone. Get my spark alone, it's a mission I'm embarking on. A kamikaze in a danger zone, far from home.